It's Sunday evening with Mitch Miller. Join the distinguished music maker and his guests from the world of entertainment, coming to you this evening from New York City. Joining Mitch tonight are these exciting people you'll want to meet. The most brilliant dancer ever to flash across the screen, and one of the all-time greats of the movies, Fred Astaire. The lively young actress who has won acclaim for her playing of the title role in the musical hit Gypsy, Sondra Church. One of the true funny men of entertainment, Joey Bishop. And the man who produces the world-famous Newport Jazz Festival, George Wein. And now to introduce Fred Astaire, Sondra Church, Joey Bishop, and George Wein, here is radio's most listened-to host to the famous and the fascinating, the Beard himself, Mitch Miller.
Thank you very much, Hal Sims, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I've been reading Fred Astaire's autobiography, Steps in Time, and learning some interesting things about Fred's tremendous career on the stage and screen. However, the book does not yield two key secrets. How to learn to dance as though you never learned any dances but were born with total knowledge of them all, and how to wear a top hat with such authority that kids aren't tempted to knock it off with a snowball. But there's something in this book for everyone at the table. Sondra Church, as an actress who began your stage career as a tot, you'll be interested in Fred's preteen trooping. And jazz impresario George Wein, you'll wonder, just as I was green with envy, at Fred Astaire's talent down through the years for attracting the best songs of our best songwriters, George Gershwin, Cole Porter, Irving Berlin, and so on. I'm sure he's introduced more standards than anyone in the business. And Joey Bishop, you'll go for the stories of all the headliners Fred played on bills with in the vaudeville days.
Oh, yes.
Joey, I'll bet you're kind of jealous of vaudeville when a comic could use the same jokes for 2 years all over the country.
I'm not jealous. We've been doing it for about 18.
Not on television, though.
Oh, yes, on television, yes.
But you use the collective we, though.
I'm speaking for all comics. I'm representing them this afternoon.
I see.
Or is it this evening?
This evening, that's right. That's what it is, Joe. Fred Astaire, how often did you and your sister Adele have to change your dance routines during those years? As you grew out of early childhood, I guess you had to rely less on being cute and more on real dancing. Am I right?
Oh, we definitely did that. As far as changing them was concerned, I think as little kids, we'd change every few weeks that something new came along to do. I don't mean a whole dance, but some steps, you know. Really, that's that part of it. We just had a kind of a set act. It's when we grew up into about 14 and 15 that we began to get with a new song and then put a new dance to it. Maybe every few weeks or so we might do that.
Well, then that accounts for why you're so everlasting fresh today. You never did rely for a year on one dance.
Well, no. How well, a dance we might rely on, but to get a little different idea on a song. When I say a few weeks, I should say, this is kind of a twister you threw me here. I never thought of it in this way. but as I remember, we tried to keep up with the times and get a new song when we needed it.
Well, Sondra Church, what was that first appearance of yours as a youngster in Hollywood? Something memorable?
Well, I sang I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy at the E-Bell Theater and threw up afterwards. Oh. My mother shoved me back on for the second chorus.
I heard you studied with Queenie Smith.
Yes, I did. A number of years.
Because when I read that in your autobiography, in the biographical material that they sent me, I remembered the first job I ever had was playing in the pit for the opening night of Hit the Deck. Oh. Opened in Rochester, New York, and Queenie Smith had the lead. Fred, you recall in your book that most of the vaudeville theaters you played had slippery floors and the managers would never let you put down rosin.
Definitely, I remember that.
Why not?
Well, I thought it would be messing up the other acts. Somebody always had... Well, a lot of them were just grouchy, you know, the stage managers automatically were grouchy. They just didn't want some kid to go around messing up the stage. So they jumped on me very often.
Joey Bishop, have you found the theater managers?
Again,
yes, I sure. Yes. Have you found that theater managers in the old vaudeville days were grouchy, or when you tour around the country, or nightclub managers?
Well, I didn't work too many theaters. You know, we just worked a variety theaters. You know, the Paramounts and those kind of places. They weren't Grouchy. They were pretty regular guys.
They let you throw rosin on the floor?
Well, I'll tell you, they allowed us rosin because each time we went out, we fought with the audience. So they didn't resent rosin.
Well, Fred Astaire, you have a story in the book about playing the elegant old Newport that would never have imagined an event like George Wein's Newport Jazz Festival. Do you remember that story of your mother in the audience?
Yeah, I surely do.
Would you tell us that?
Well, she was sitting in the audience at the Opera House, and this was a vaudeville thing that ran two performances a night, something like that. And she heard somebody in the back say, I wonder if they are nice people.
What did she say?
She turned around and she said, they're very nice people.
Well, George Wein, do you have a story of tangling with Newport society when you first brought jazz to the quiet old New England resort?
Well, I always think of this particular story, which isn't necessarily tangled with Newport society, but Senator Green was at Newport giving the keynote address, and it was pouring rain, and he was standing out there while Count Basie's band was playing the national anthem, and Count Basie's band boy was standing there with an umbrella, and I said to him, would you mind holding the umbrella over Senator Green until Basie gets up? He says, I'm sorry. He says, this umbrella's for Count Basie and nobody else.
Great.
Sandra Church, in the musical Gypsy, you play the rising young star, Gypsy Rose Lee, and Ethel Merman plays Gypsy's mother. Tell me, Sandra, during rehearsals, did the real Gypsy give you any instruction in the art of the striptease?
Well, one night, the director, Jerome Robbins, and I did go to Gypsy's house, and she did her whole routine for us, and then we sat and looked through her scrapbooks, and she told us funny stories about her life till about 2 or 3 in the morning. But she did her whole act for us that she does now, really, the act she does now. When she unbuttons her blouse and, well, she unpins it, really, and the pins hit the tuba or something, go bing!
She did the most elegant striptease I ever did see. Joey, did you ever see Gypsy Rose Lee do her act?
Years ago.
In the Irving Place Theater,
well,
right?
I worked in burlesque.
Really?
Of course.
Do you have any stories about stripteasers like Gypsy Rose Lee?
I don't think they're for a family audience. Especially with a church and a bishop sitting here, right?
Well, Sandra, in reading about Gypsy and her sister, June Havoc...
Son of a gun, every time I get a laugh, he turns away from me.
That's what you're here for, Joey. Sandra, in reading about Gypsy and her sister, June Havoc, it seems that all through their childhoods, they were just one jump ahead of the truant officer. And Fred Astaire, what about you and your sister, Adele? In your book, Steps in Time, it's clear that you two were pretty busy on the stage right through your formative years. How did your mother work in some schooling for you kids?
Oh, yeah, we always had that schooling when we weren't doing something else. It's like nowadays that these kids that work out in pictures, they have to do a certain amount of schooling before they can get on the screen, you know. So they wait. They work up to 3 o'clock. I think they're released to go on to do the work in the studio. But we used to get it in the morning on the train or something like that.
But did you ever run into any of these societies in different cities that were against children working in the theater?
Well, the Gary Society refused to let us appear certain places. There was you've heard of the Gary Society.
Oh,
of course.
Yes.
I wrote about that in the thing.
Oh,
and
well,
and it's quite a long story. One place we weren't allowed to appear in Los Angeles, so I think we were taken off when we were very small. And, this was all over the country, there were places that you couldn't play a child act, you know. Some places.
I forget who the guests were because most of people in show business have started so very young, and one of them, when asked, was being tested by the Gary Society for his knowledge, and he asked where St. Louis was, and he said, well, I don't know, I haven't played there. And I think it was one of the Foys. Was it? Do you remember, Joey?
No, but it's one of those Mitch Miller jokes, right?
No, I didn't make that up, Joey.
Oh, I thought you were ad-libbing. I thought you were kidding. No. Son of a gun, look, I gave you credit for nothing.
Well, New York is one of the main places that you, a child act couldn't appear under 16, I think, something like that.
Well, speaking of schooling, George Wein, I know that when you're not masterminding the Newport Jazz Festival, one of the things you do is lecture on jazz at Boston University. And teaching it at school is what almost killed Shakespeare. Are you trying to do the same for jazz by teaching?
Well, it's pretty difficult to kill jazz, Mitch. We try to get a little interest in it, and sometimes it's rather it works out with some amusing things. Sometimes people get confused when I can't do the course. For instance, Father O'Connor, a Catholic chaplain of Boston University, comes in and substitutes for me, and people get very confused when they come in the classroom. They don't know exactly what to expect when they see Father O'Connor talking about jazz and sitting there at a, I think it's a Methodist school, Boston University, so it's really quite involved.
Only in America.
Only in America.
George, somebody told me you're conducting a campaign to get jazz musicians to dress like everybody else. Are you having any success?
Well, most jazz musicians are just catching up to Fred Astaire right now. I mean, you'll be surprised. You see Miles Davis, and he's wearing the similar type
What is it? Tell me. What do I wear?
Well, you, whatever it is, it's impeccable.
Oh, you mean that? You mean that beard? No, I don't wear that. I like that. I like to have one.
No, you mean
the Ivy League and the Italian tailored clothes.
Well,
and,
I didn't know I wore those, but anyway, if they wear it, it's great. I'll get them.
Joey Bishop, do you have any criticism of the way your musician friends dress?
No. As a matter of fact, I met a musician yesterday whose pants were not wrinkled.
You've been hanging out with the wrong musicians, Joe.
No, I have no music in my act, so consequently, ours is purely social. I say hello to the to the fellas, and they say hello to me. They told me, it would be nice in a certain stage in your career if you had a conductor. So I was thinking of hiring a guy to play tissue paper in a comb, just to stand there and conduct.
You say you have no music in your act. You do a great Ted Lewis bit. I've seen it 100 times, and I howl every time.
Yes. Well, I mean, I walk and I say to the band, if you can play this, right. If not, I'll find something else to go off with.
Sandra Church, the musical Gypsy is your first singing and dancing part on Broadway, although you've a nice list of credits and straight parts for a girl barely in her 20s. And tell me, was Jerome Robbins a great help to you in preparing you to dance on Broadway?
Actually, I don't do too much dancing. When I auditioned for the show, I had to do all sorts of dances, from soft shoe to Spanish, and get out my toe shoes that I hadn't had on for 5 years. But actually, in the show, as it is now, I do hardly any dancing at all. I do a strip, but it's not really so much dancing as walking.
Well, Fred Astaire, the first time you and your sister danced in New York, you were canceled after the first matinee, weren't you?
Isn't he a wonderful host?
All these pleasant memories are so jolly. Well, I'll tell you, yes. This was the Proctor's Fifth Avenue Theater, which was on the corner of Broadway and 28th Street. And we had an act, and it was finished after the first performance, which we didn't know until we went to theater that night, thinking we'd been put in a better position on the bill. We opened the show with a talking act.
Talk about hard-hearted managers. They not only wouldn't let him put rosin on the floor, but they fired him the same night.
This time they were right, I can tell you that. We really flopped, but it hurt, naturally. Didn't enjoy it, but got over it.
How old were you when this happened?
I guess probably about 12 or something.
Well, Sandra, tell me what it's like for a young gal singing her first role on Broadway to be playing with that great name of musical comedy, Ethel Merman. Is she formidable and intimidating?
No, it's quite marvelous, really, because, you think she is such a great star, and she's just such a nice kind of person to be with, and we kid around, and we have a lot of fun. She doesn't act like a star in quotes or anything like that, really, offstage. Mm-hmm.
Well, here's Sandra Church in her first musical, and Fred Astaire has just made his first non-musical movie, the film version of Neville Shute's novel, On the Beach. Fred, how did it feel never once to put on those dancing shoes in a picture?
Great. Absolutely great. No music, no rehearsals, no rosin, nothing to worry about.
What sort of part do you play in On the Beach?
Well, I play the part of a scientist, and it's all very serious, as you must know. That story is a very serious book and a very serious movie. And I'm just one of the cast. The cast is headed by Greg Peck and Ava Gardner, and I have one of the good parts in it. It's a darn good part. It's not a very big one, but it is good, and I just couldn't resist doing it when they asked me to do it.
What was location life like down in Australia, Fred? Did you play much golf?
Oh, no. No, I didn't. I played one round of golf, and there were so many flies following us around. It was very hot, It was 107, 109 out in the shade down there. They had these. The summer is in our winter time, which is January, and that was one of the things that when we first arrived, it was very, very hot. But we enjoyed the whole stay very much. We finally got used to it.
Well, Fred, you know Joey Bishop here is part owner of a golf course in New Jersey right across the river. Joey,
yes.
Fred's an avid golfer, I know. Why don't you have him down to the club?
Why don't you say lousy golf and be done with it?
No, as a matter of fact, I saw him in one of your pictures with Oscar Levant.
Yeah.
Am I right? In which you were playing golf. And I know you happen to be a very good golfer.
I don't play
too well. I lost a ball on the green yesterday. But it'd be my pleasure to have you there.
I'd love to do it. I'd love to be able to go.
Yeah, it's only 15 minutes from downtown Manhattan.
Any greens fees?
We'll get together after this show. You know, I once went to Bob Hope's home, you know, and he has three or four holes there, you know. And I played the three or four holes, and when I was through, he says to me, that's $1.50 green fees. I gave him the buck and a half. I didn't say a word. Now I was leaving. I said to him, are you crowded on weekends?
You left him standing? Not a retard from Bob?
No. Well, you know, I made sure I was in the car and we were pulling away.
Well, Joey, you're all comics, you co-owners of that golf club, and I find it hard to believe you run it in an orderly, business-like fashion. Do you?
Well, we're pretty serious off the floor. As a rule, comics are, in your experiences, haven't you found that when you sit and talk to a comic, I don't mean a buffoon, I don't mean a guy who wants to get a million laughs at a table, but there's a rule, we discuss things pretty seriously.
Do you comics exchange golf jokes amongst yourself so that you can give Fred Astaire here a fresh one to take back to the coast with him?
Well, this may be a good golf story for you. It's the story of four guys on the green, and the fellow furthest away is ready to putt, and a ball comes flying on the green. He turns around and says, where'd it come from? And I guess, I don't know. He says, kick it in the hole. The fellow says, you can't do that. He says, you certainly can. He violated golf etiquette hitting into us. He says, okay, and he kicks it right in the hole. From out of nowhere comes a guy with a 3-wood slung over his right shoulder. He says, you fellas see a ball? The guy says, you went in the hole. He says, don't kid me, I'm only playing 5 weeks. The guy says, you went in the hole. He walks over, takes a look in the hole, says, son of a gun, turns around to his group and howls, hey, fellas, I got an 8.
That's a beautiful story.
Great. Sandra Church, I have the original cast album of Gypsy here, and I'd like to play one of your songs from the show. And it seems to me you have a very difficult part, playing a gal from her early teens to young womanhood. What do you do to help create the illusion of growing up through the evening, Sandra?
Well, of course I do it. Acting-wise, you know, I mean, thinking to myself and things. And then also with a change of costumes. I start out with pigtails and very little makeup. And like the first song I sing is kind of sung more young or however you want to say it than
open air style.
Well, as it goes on. And then I, you know, gradually my clothes change and my hair changes. And eventually then when I get to doing the strip is really the first time they see me ever in any kind of looking at all pretty, I would say, in any way, because before that they make a big thing of saying that I'm not pretty, and I say so too.
Well, kids, here now from the original cast album of Gypsy, Sandra Church sings, Let Me Entertain You.
Wichita's one and only burlesque theater presents Miss Gypsy Rose Lee. Let me make you smile. Let me do a few tricks, some old and then some new tricks. I'm very versatile. And if you're real good, I'll make you feel good. I want your spirits to climb. So let me entertain you, and we'll have a real good time. Yes, sir, we'll have a real good time.
From the original cast album, Gypsy, Sandra Church sang Let Me Entertain You, and now...
I've heard of fast songs, but this is ridiculous. What, did you say, one bar?
And now, George Ween, the Newport Jazz Festival, which you run every 4th of July weekend, quickly established itself as the World Series of Jazz. You work all year arranging the 4-day program, which presents several hundred musicians and singers, all at the top of their art. At best, this sounds like a gigantic feat of programming, but musicians have the reputation of being hard to deal with. I know I am one. They're supposed to be vague and unbusinesslike. Do you ever find your artist showing up on the wrong night or not showing up at all?
It's happened a couple of times. Artists haven't made it the night they were due and came the next night and said, I thought I was going to play tonight. But the most difficulty we get from anyone up there is probably from CBS when they're doing a radio broadcast.
How
with
is
Mitch
that?
Miller doing the, doing the announcing.
Well, have you found that musicians are strange people to do business with?
Oh, no more strange than any artistic branch of the world of business.
Has the town of Newport finally adjusted to these strangers who descend on them every 4th of July weekend?
I think they've adjusted completely. In fact, I don't think they'd be any more surprised than anyone who looks as natural, for instance, as Fred Astaire walking down Broadway at 10 o'clock in the morning in a top hat, white tie, and tails. And that's the way they feel about the jazz musicians. Nobody really pays a second look anymore, the jazz people. No.
Well, George Ween, Newport is a sort of quiet resort where everyone has his own house. And these may look like hotels, but they're private mansions for the most part. And where do the 20,000 jazz fans who make the pilgrimage to Newport get to sleep? I've never figured it out.
Telephone booth.
That's not so far wrong. Of course, the town of Newport is very cooperative. Many of the people over the weekend, it's always the 4th of July weekend, and they sleep on the beach, and the cops patrol the beach to see that, everything is all right and that nobody bothers many people sleep on the beach. They sleep in the cars, and the town really welcomes everyone down there. And it's really, I've never seen more people having such a good time for such an extended period of time. But you'll vouch for that.
I sure will, George. Fred Astaire, I'm going to be the first interviewer who did not ask you who your favorite dancing partner was. I am curious about this, though. You danced with your sister Adele for, what was it, 20 years? Before she retired to raise a family?
Oh yes, I think it was not certainly that long. She, well, I'll get her going to dates again. Adele worked with me until 1929, I think it was. So that's longer than 20 years.
Was it then terribly difficult to adjust to a new partner and have you found it takes extra work every time you do work with someone new?
Well, it does that. But making the first departure from a partnership like that is really quite a problem, and you wonder how they're going to take it. And a lot of times they don't like it. They begin to say, "Well, can't get along without the partner." So when Deli retired, I knew she was going to retire. Well, sometime within that time. So I was figuring out what I do next, and then by accident I ran into working with Ginger Rogers, and then that became a long partnership again. And then when that one had to dissolve, then I got belted all over the place by people they threatened and everything else, you know. They said, if you dissolve, I had one instance where they said, if you dissolve partnership with Ginger Rogers, we will kill your baby. This is when I just had this child, youngster, was just born. I knew this was some crank gag or something else, so I didn't pay much attention to it. But they just wonder why. You know, things happen like that.
People don't want their images to be broken, even by themselves. Joey, he's going to say something.
No, I'm just adjusting myself in the chair.
Oh, all right.
Don't every time I make a move make you think I have something ready to say.
Well, I see you winding up there, and I always
was just
want to get you
comfortable
room.
Is it the boardroom?
Boardroom,
it's a beautiful table. Would you like to put our hands here and maybe try to contact somebody?
Well, I'm contacting Fred Astaire now. Fred, you've got some handsome pictures of your kids in your book, Steps in Time. How are they as dancers?
Well, young Fred Jr., he's been in service for 4 years in the Air Force, and he never liked to dance at all. Anyway, my daughter likes to dance, but I don't think they have any ideas of professional dancing at all.
They dare not compete with the old man. That's what it amounts to.
Well, they don't seem to want to dance. I know Ava loves to dance, but not like that.
Well, Fred, at the end of your book, you write that you'll never again do a musical movie. And I think most people will agree with me that your musicals get better all the time. Why stop now?
Oh, well, I don't say that I'll never again will do it. I've had the what I felt was the general run of dancing musicals, and furthermore, there weren't any particular ones that were to be done at that time, so I just decided I didn't want to do any more of those, and I was making the departure. I put the dancing situation over onto TV and did that show, and then I wanted to try the dramatic end and the other thing for Stanley Kramer and that On the Beach thing. This is just, if the proper kind of a music comes along that I really want to do and feel is the right thing to do, I would do it. If it has to be a pretty hot one, though, I think.
Well, after a lifetime of dancing, do you mean to say you can stop dancing just like that if you want to?
Well, I'm not going to stop dancing.
You're not going to stop dancing?
Not until it stops.
No,
he's me.
Going. You may go to Roseland tonight.
Joey, you saw Fred's first shot at television, didn't you?
Yes.
And this was a memorable event, as Fred has been embarrassed by. How many awards did they give you? 8, was it?
There were the 9 awards, the Emmys.
Nine Emmys, yes.
We got 9.
And, Fred, your first shot at a television musical won you all the honors in the book. Did you find dancing for television at all different, at all a different experience from dancing for the movies?
Well, it is quite a different experience because you work it out differently. You can't get in the place to work your show live when you think you can. I didn't get much rehearsal on the stage that we actually worked on, and that was a little surprise to me because I didn't know there were all kinds of shows. The Eddie Fisher show was going on, the so-and-so show, and I don't know what on. I can never get in there to get the thing on. But we finally got our work, and I took plenty of time. I decided when I did have time to do the thing, I was going to just do it as I was sure it would not be a frenzy, you know. So I think that's probably why it worked out well. I took plenty of time on it.
Just fantastically good.
Thank you.
Joey Bishop, speaking of television, didn't I see you debating with a ventriloquist dummy on your own show, Keep Talking?
Yes, it seems that our team hasn't won a game in the last 9 months. So they decided that even a dummy could beat us. So Paul Wishart brought Jerry Mahoney down.
And what happened?
And I played the game against Jerry Mahoney.
Who won?
It was a tie.
Well, kids, we have a tie here because I'm afraid our time's about up. And to our listeners, I'll be back next Sunday night. Till then, this is Mitch Miller from New York saying good night and have a good week. Thank you.
Mitch Miller has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.